This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour, by the way, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. All the Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. James Creepy joins us from the Oregonian. James, welcome. What a pleasure to have you.
Appreciate you for having me on.
All right. So, Dan Lanning makes the transition from a Pac-12 schedule to a Big Ten schedule where the world is telling them you got to be physical in the Big Ten Conference. It seemed like he already had the makings of that. Am I being fair about my assessment?
Yeah. For those who are in the Big Ten footprint who were blissfully unaware that football was played west of the Mississippi River prior to 2024, Oregon was awfully successful, and there was somebody out here named Mario Cristobal who generated quite a long line of NFL offensive linemen. Dan Lanning and company inherited a cupboard that wasn't bare, particularly on offense, and they added and enhanced significantly in many spots, especially on defense. And when you take a good situation and make it better, lo and behold, you were able to hit the ground running very effectively with a move to the Big Ten. So Oregon was best positioned of the four West Coast schools. They were far and away the best position roster-wise for not just the physicality of the Big Ten, but every aspect of it, the physicality, the travel, the 8 games in 8 weeks that nobody else had to do, you name it. They were equipped and they were ready to hit the ground running. And as I say, that off-season trope was extremely overblown when it came to Oregon.
Well, I'll give you an example because there have been a long time Big Ten writers, and I'm going back into the 90s here, James, but just to let you know about the attitude in the conference. When Joe Tiller came into the conference, he's at Purdue, and look, he throws the ball. Joe Tiller's the one that changed the conference. I mean, he changed it above everybody else because he threw it. And they used to do these weekly teleconferences, and each coach got about 7 or 8 minutes with the media. And it was, I don't know, mid to late October. And one of the writers, one of the old-time writers, said to Joe Tiller, or asked him, he says, this passing game you have, do you think that's actually, actually going to work in November in the Big Ten? And Tiller had the best response. He says, I ran this offense in Wyoming, and that's not exactly the banana belt. So, so that's the attitude that Oregon had to deal with. Conversely, I love the duck floating down the river. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, they've certainly not been shy from a branding standpoint at this institution, and that goes back the whole generation. And that's, like I say, for those of a certain age, this is the only Oregon that they know. Those of a different age, they remember the 95 Rose Bowl and that being the dawn of the Oregon that we know today. Obviously a game that went Penn State's way back at that time, but that was really the beginning of the modern Oregon football program that we've all come to know for the last 30 years. But that was a major turning point. That season, everything about that season was the turning point. And like I say, and ever since then, yes, the branding and Nike and everything else that's come with it has certainly raised the profile in an awfully big way.
All right. Bo Nix, of course, did such great things in his 2 years there. 1 year with, I think it was Kenny Dillingham and then Will Stein. Dylan Gabriel left Oklahoma, comes into Oregon. What has he brought to the table that's impressed everybody there?
The same level of accuracy and efficiency as Bo, really, in a lot of ways. And I'd say compared to Bo last season, probably a little bit more mobility and willingness with the legs, whereas Bo in his first season at Oregon definitely did more running in Dillingham's offense, and really had to, in fairness, where the receiving core didn't have as many weapons as it did in his second season, and he was intent on staying in the pocket more and developing more as a pocket passer and staying there and relying more on the weapons and less on his legs, which got him a minor injury the year before. Well, yeah, and you saw what the results were, and it looked, obviously, set the record for accuracy in a season. Gabriel is kind of the mix of all of those things. He's the accuracy and the efficiency, yes, with some checkdowns, much as Nix did, but also with the vertical passing game, because his receiving core is awfully good as well. And he's added and has the ability to escape the pocket and move around quite a bit with his legs, which was always an asset of his, whether it was at Oklahoma or UCF. So I say it's kind of an amalgamation of his own traits combined with some of the things that we've seen before with Nix the past couple of years.
This is as under a radar number one team as I've seen because let's face it, ESPN carrying the SEC. It's SEC, SEC, SEC. They don't talk as often about Oregon. But they had, the Ohio State game is one thing, James. I mean, that's, that's two top teams head-to-head, great game. Oregon won the game. But what wasn't smooth in the Boise State game and what wasn't smooth in the Wisconsin game?
Well, the Boise State game and, for that matter, the Idaho game the week before, the first 2 weeks of the season, everything was about the offensive line. Everything. Yeah. Everything off was just boiled down to the offensive line was in bordering on disarray. That's the bottom line of it all. And the Boise State game specifically, they had 11 different offensive line combinations in less than 60 plays.
Right.
So they switched around, they changed it 11 times with four different combinations. So they were all over the place. So that you talk about consistency there, there was none. They were trying anything. They turned it around very quickly the week after and basically have been one of the best offensive lines in the country. They're a Joe Moore Award finalist despite those first 2 weeks because of how good they've been since. They've gotten much more consistent at the center position, though it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but much better there. And even when dealing with an injury at one of the guard spots, they've been able to plug that hole and not have an issue. So that was the biggest thing there. Defensively, they've been consistent the whole year outside of four or five carries by Ashton Genty, which, again, those of us out here knew in real time that that would stand the test of time. And as the season has gone on, yes, lo and behold, that guy does that to a lot of people. But if you take those four or five carries away from this Oregon defense, yeah, they've been consistent against the run and really in just about every other phase and aspect all season long. So, again, if you put that as an aside and chalk it up to a great player doing what great players do sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it's forgivable. Wisconsin, they were dealing with, for a couple of weeks, the absence of Tez Johnson, and they were trying to mask some things and cover up for some things offensively in those couple of games. And I think it kind of came back to bite them a little bit in Wisconsin. And that also doesn't take away from what Wisconsin's defense did, because I thought Wisconsin's defense just played them better than any defense all season. And not just because it was a close game. Mm-hmm. I thought they just played and executed really, really well. And credit to them, to Luke Fickell and his staff, and also for the fact that they were the first of a couple of opponents in a row there for Oregon who were coming off bye weeks the week before. And Oregon was playing its eighth game in 8 weeks. And, yeah, you got the results that you saw on a cool night in Madison.
Yeah, no. Yeah, and again, those are the games where they've been challenged. So you have to ask when you get challenged, because Penn State had to win in overtime against USC. Penn State beat Minnesota by one. You're not going to negotiate a season like this unless that happens. I'm sure everybody there, or the vast majority of people, expected this to be Ohio State this week. What was the reaction when they found out it was Penn State instead?
Well, I would say, you know, from the masses, from fans, certainly, I'd say that was probably a degree of expectation. And after all, how couldn't it be? Because I think that talking point for the better part of the last, whatever we're up to now, 5-6 days, I'd have to get us to be framed accordingly. It's not a slight at Penn State.
Oh, no.
It's a knock of acknowledging the reality that Ohio State was a 3-touchdown favorite against the 6-win Michigan team, who, you know, outside of anybody believing in the maize and blue, who was going to believe that upset was going to happen? And you had Ohio State players saying weeks before that, you know, they were going to see Oregon again. So clearly they were looking ahead to a matchup as well. Bottom line, from inside the program and the like, you didn't have much by way of a reaction time to be had. Were they aware before their game with Washington that Ohio State had lost? Yeah. But in terms of how long did they have to react or do anything, not much, because then they were jumping into pregame and going through their deal at that point. But from the masses and from fans out here, like I say, they also didn't have exactly a ton of time because most of them were tailgating and watching the game, or if they were watching at home. So, you know, some I'm sure were pretty amused to see Ohio State take a lump again, and I'm sure there were others who were looking forward to an awfully, you know, pretty big football game, but weren't exactly looking past or looking down at this matchup either.
Yeah, because Jack Ham and I were watching in the Penn State broadcast booth, but we were doing the pregame show at the time. So, James, it was one of those, like, okay, glance over, miss field goal, glance over again, miss field goal, glance over, interception. Every time I glanced over, something bad was happening. And it actually took a little bit to absorb that, wait a minute, Penn State wins this game, they're in it. It just, you know, because it was, let's face it, I know Michigan's now beaten them 4 years in a row, but offensively, that Michigan team can't compete with Ohio State. They can't, yet they won the game. And that's what really struck me about that. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah. I mean, call it what it is. They were a better coached team again.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have an offense that is one of the worst in the country with a quarterback who effectively, and I don't knock the young man, but he's a walk-on who can't throw. And he doesn't have the only weapon at his disposal. He is not available.
Yeah.
And they go on the road and manage to win.
You're right, yeah.
Against an offense with that kind of firepower that may have been one of the worst play-called games with that allotment of talent. Maybe in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
That's what it takes. It takes absolute ineptitude by the favorite with the talent advantage, and it takes supreme execution by the literal and proverbial underdog. And again, credit to them. They're the better coach team yet again in that matchup.
James, I have to ask you, because this question is born out of the Maryland experience. Every time I go down to broadcast a game at Maryland, especially in basketball, they lament as a fan base and even in media as well about no longer being in the ACC. Now, look, the Pac-12 essentially doesn't exist anymore. It sort of does. What's the fan reaction to the fact that no Pac-12, but it's the Big Ten now?
Even those of an extreme age segment, at this point, anybody who is holding on to nostalgia and waxing poetic about, gosh, couldn't things just be geographic and stay as they were from 100 years ago? Those voices have long since silenced themselves.
Okay.
First off, go back to when the LA schools got invited.
Yeah.
Most everybody among the masses who knew where this was headed knew this was an eventuality regardless. It was a matter of when, not if. And once the LA schools got in and got invited, it became urgent. And I think that became urgent not just from those who matter and those in power and those with influence and those who get the task done, but urgent from fans who saw that as well, because there was no viability to the Pac-12 going forward.
Right.
And if you position yourselves accordingly, as this institution has, as this athletic department has, and specifically the football program has, you don't leave yourself that vulnerable to a degree of risk of being on Apple TV.
Nice.
That is not a palatable alternative. So, but now what are they saying? You know, a year in, they didn't need the success on the field or on the court so far. They didn't need that to validate anything. This fan base didn't like the inaccessibility of the Pac-12 network. Who did?
Right.
They didn't like some of the Pac-12 After Dark game times. There weren't too many of those, and the ones that were usually on the road this season. Hey, lo and behold, funny thing happens when you get to a bigger conference that has major national television network deals. Yeah, the reach and the exposure is there. That's part of it. Yeah, that's, and again, of course, obviously the success on the field just furthers it, but no, truly. Even for those who at the beginning were holding on to nostalgia, yeah, you don't hear them anymore. I've not gotten too many emails waxing poetic about, gosh, if only they could have been playing Cal, that just would have been so much better.
Yeah. So let me, one final question about this. When Penn State joined the Big Ten, and so this is back in the early 90s, and I was talking with Joe Paterno, and I said, what are the challenges of a revamped schedule? And he says, Steve, we have to learn everybody. Now, I realize in the transfer portal era, there's going to be changes, right? But he said, you have to learn everybody. He said, I could look at the West Virginia left tackle, and he's back, and I can say, well, he's a little bit better, he's improved, or he's about the same as he was before. He said, we have to learn everybody. So this is going to be the seventh different Big Ten opponent that was not on the Oregon schedule before. My question is, what kind of job did Dan Lanning and his staff do in making sure that they were prepared for people week after week they hadn't seen before, besides UCLA, USC, and Washington?
Well, and they didn't even play SC this season.
Right, that's right, yeah. Sorry.
I don't think that, you know, drawing the analogy to history there, look, we're operating in a different world now. When you've got the expansion of staffs and support staffs to the scale that exists now, you know, we're not putting together physical tape here. You know, you've got an army of support staff, of analysts, of GAs, and et cetera,
yeah,
who spend entire off seasons plotting through, you know, digital film and doing all the due diligence. That's what the offseason looks like. And yeah, you do it for everybody who's on your schedule. And then as the season progresses, if you're setting up for postseason sorts of opportunities, yeah, there's all sorts of scouting that goes into that as well. But again, that's not new. I'm not going to say that's unique to Oregon and claim like they were some savants that you know, they were ahead of the curve or, you know, doing something so revolutionary or different. That's everybody nowadays. That's, if you're at the big kids table and you're not doing that, that's dereliction of duty at this point. So no, they, like I say, they, what did they do? They did what everybody else was doing. They also, how did they do it better? They had better players.
that's shocking.
That's kind of the key. Yeah,
that's shocking.
I don't think it was because they just had this incredible insight of film was there. No, they just had really better players.
No, I mean, better players is big, but I do give them credit. That's just a lot of people to learn. I know you got a bigger staff. It's a little bit different than, like, hey, I know what they played
Not
Oregon State.
I don't think if they had 1 hour of preparation for Purdue, which they basically did because they had a desperate coach taking over who had called one game before, and a quarterback who had, you know, they had nothing to go off of effectively. And yeah, you saw the, I don't think if they had no preparation against Purdue that Purdue would have scored in that game. So in fairness, there were some matchups that were awfully favorable as well.
I was going to give you 15 minutes. No, on the Purdue thing. All right. Yeah, because Penn State saw them as well. I don't even know if Purdue practiced taking a knee in practice. All right. James, I assume you'll be in Indianapolis, right?
Absolutely.
Great. Look forward to seeing you there, and appreciate the time you gave us today. It was terrific.
Thanks so much.
All right. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.